And on this CD, we talk about advanced communication skills. And they're just so simple, and this stuff has just such profound effects on the way that we can communicate with everyone in our lives. Now, I just want to start off talking about rapport and the power of rapport. Rapport is the ability to enter someone else's world and make them feel that you absolutely understand where they're coming from and that you've got a strong common bond. Rapport is just so important in our life because it's one of the ultimate tools for actually being able to produce results with other people. And when we have rapport with someone, they like us. And when they like us, they trust us. And it makes almost any task simpler and easier and much more enjoyable. So how do we create rapport in our life? Well, what we do is create and we discover things in common with another person, and we do this through mirroring or matching. And what we mirror and match is all of the different ways that we communicate with each other. Now, 93% of our communication is unconscious, and we do it unconsciously through our physiology, our body language, and our voice. Only 7% of our communication is actually consciously provided, and we do that with the type of words that we use. Now, out of the 93% of unconscious communication, 55% of our communication is done through our physiology. And what we're talking about here is the way that you stand, your body language, the gestures that you use, your facial expressions, and also the types of movements. What we're matching and mirroring is all of that in their physiology. I love hanging around kids. The quickest way to get rapport with a kid is to pull a face like they are. And kids have so many wonderful facial expressions. And that when you actually match or mirror their facial expressions, so they're looking at you as if they're looking in a mirror, they either think that you're absolutely gorgeous or they think that you're really, really ugly and they start picking on you. Quickest way for them to gain rapport with you. So what we're doing here, and I might need to make this very, very clear, we're not copying. You know, how many of you actually had a brother or a sister copy you when you were younger and how annoying it was? So it's not about copying. It's about just reflecting back to the person what they're doing with their body language and their gestures and their facial expressions. It's a really, really fast way to get a child out of a tantrum, by the way. Because, see, when I get rapport with my child who's just thrown himself on the ground, I can get him to stop that very quickly. How do I do that? This is particularly fun in supermarkets. What you do is you actually hop on the floor with them and copy what they're doing. They stop pretty much straight away. Okay, 38% of the 93% that's unconscious communication comes from our voice. And what we're talking about matching and mirroring here is a person's tone, the volume, the pace, and also the types of pauses that we have. I used to be a teacher a long time ago, and I used to notice that I was a phys ed teacher and I'd be out in the middle of the oval, and then I'd go into the staff room and I'd be yelling at the top of my voice because that's what I'd been doing all day. And everyone used to turn around and go, "Can you please speak more quietly?" Now, I used to get quite offended by it. I would have much preferred if someone had have matched or mirrored my volume, so I would have heard back how loud I was talking, and then I could have reduced it with a little bit of dignity instead of being told to do so. Have you ever noticed how some people you talk to speak really, really fast and you actually can't keep up with them and it's really tiring to listen to them? Or there's some people who talk really, really slowly. Once again, what you're doing is you're matching and mirroring the pace that they're speaking at to get rapport with them. And you'll also notice that there are some people who have very long pauses, particularly when they're going to answer a question. So it's important that you have the same type of pauses in your voice and how you're talking so that you'll have more rapport with them, with how you're speaking. Now let's go to the conscious communication. 7% of our communication is conscious. And we do that through the common experiences and associations. Have you ever noticed when you go to a party, how one of the first questions you ask is, what do you do? What we're looking for is some sort of connection, something that we can say, oh, okay, I know what that is, and then it leads into a conversation. When we meet with someone new, we ask those questions so that we can find common experiences, so that we've got something to talk about. Another aspect of words that we can match and mirror are keywords. Have you ever noticed how certain generations have these words that they use? I love the word cool because it seems to have made its way through a lot of generations, including mine. And I notice when I work with young people that they have a particular group of words. One of my favourites was sick. I think that went through for about 2 years for a while. So when I was working with young people, what you're doing is you're just reflecting back their key words, their cool words back to them. The last way that you can gain rapport through words is by matching their representational systems. And what you're doing here is you're matching the person's preferred way of interpreting the world, and it's the quickest and fastest way to build rapport with someone. So representational systems, or communication preferences as they're also known, are preferences for how we collect our information from the world. And we're going to spend the rest of the CD talking about this really exciting concept. So representational systems, or communication preferences, are preferences for how we collect our information from the world. Now, there are some people in this world who will predominantly collect their information or experience the world by what they see. There are some people who will mainly interpret the world by what they hear. Some people, it's by how they feel about things. And there are some people in the world who will predominantly interpret the world by facts and figures and the knowledge that they have. Now, we use all four ways of collecting our information, but we do tend to have a preference towards one or two. And what I'd like to do is take you through each of those and talk about the characteristics of how these people interpret the world. I teach this a lot in teamwork and with teams, because once you understand that not everyone in this world interprets the world the way that you do, it gives you a far greater understanding of where they're coming from, so that you stop judging them and making them wrong. So let's talk about visually orientated communicators. With people who predominantly experience the world by what they see, they tend to move fast and talk fast. And the reason that they move and talk fast is because what they do is they actually walk into a room, for example, and they see everything at the same time and actually want you to see everything that they can see so that they keep talking and why can't you see what they're seeing, and who's got someone in their life like that? And so sometimes what happens is they're talking so fast because they take in so much information. Now, because they talk really fast, they actually don't breathe very much. So you'll notice that they tend to have a fairly high-pitched voice. And the reason they have a high-pitched voice is because they breathe from their throat area. They're so busy talking, they don't actually take the time to take it down into their stomach. You'll also spot a visual communicator by the fact that they are very colour coordinated. They will not be seen with clashing colours. Appearances are very important to them. And in fact, they'll be the person you know who's very concerned about how they look. They'll have the nice cars, the designer clothes, the great house. And what that's about is their self-image is very much linked to how they look and their appearance. When they look good, they feel really good about themselves. And in fact, that's how they show their excellence. They have a great respect for themselves, and that's why you'll notice that they appear to always be dressed very, very well. And it's interesting in teams sometimes because I notice that they get judged for that. People make them wrong and think that they're quite shallow, when in fact in their world it's very, very important to them. Body type-wise, they tend to be very tall and lean. They stand very tall, even if they're not tall, and that's so that they can see everything that's going on around them. They tend to go into jobs like design and fashion, anywhere where there's that creative flair where they can show what it is that they're doing. We've also found a lot of school teachers and presenters are visual as well. Now, these people are very much about big picture. They actually don't like going into detail, and this is so important for a team member. For these people, you need to show them the vision of where you're going or what you're explaining to them. So they need to see that they're not necessarily interested in the detail. Once you've got them enrolled in the big picture and vision, they're motivated, and they don't necessarily need to know the details that go with it. And this is very, very important, particularly if you want to keep rapport with them. Visuals tend to use words like see, look, appear, show, visualise, it's crystal clear, take a peek, it's under your nose, and I see it. And in fact, when you're working with someone who's particularly visual and they're in a high level of stress and you're arguing with them, if you actually say the words, I see what you're saying, or I see it, they'll actually get that you've got rapport with them and you're understanding where they're coming from. If you say to them, I hear what you're saying, it doesn't mean anything to them because it's much more important that you can see what they're doing. classic gesture for a visual is pointing. See, visuals actually will point because what they want to do is they want you to see what it is that they're talking about. So for visuals, as I said before, appearances are very important to them. Things need to look good to get them excited about something, and they memorise by seeing pictures and words, not by actually listening. So they don't tend to be very good listeners. But as long as they can see what you're talking about, you've won them over. Kinesthetically orientated communicators are people who are very, very aware of their feelings, and so they tend to be much slower with their movement. So where a visual is quite fast, they tend to be the opposite. They've got a much slower tempo, and they actually have quite long pauses before they'll even answer a question. Now, a visual, how long do you think it takes a visual to answer a question? That's right, the answer's a nanosecond. They actually verbalise while they're thinking, and so they actually talk a lot as well. What a kinesthetic does when you ask them a question is they actually think about the question and then they process how you'll feel with how they answer with it. So it can actually take them a long time to answer. So you can imagine a visual and a kinesthetic trying to communicate in their own styles. They breathe from the abdomen. So they're much deeper breathers, and because of that, they'll tend to have a low, deep tonality when they speak. The classic gesture for a kinesthetic is upturned palms and arms bent. It's a very placid, placating type of gesture. Okay, now people who are kinesthetically orientated, they're about feelings and they're about touch. They get good and bad vibes about things. And when they get a bad vibe, you won't have them enrolled in anything. They also tend to stand with fairly close proximity as well. And it's interesting because I've had clients come into my clinic where husband, wife, and she's saying, oh, he's always got his hands all over me. He's always touching me. And he's saying, well, she's always pushing me away. And what we worked out was that she was actually high visual and he was high kinesthetic. He needs the touch to feel loved, but she actually needs to hold him at arm's length. And hopefully you can guess why. That's right, it's so that she can see how gorgeous he is. So what we did is we taught them this and then they had to find that middle ground between them instead of making each other wrong. Now, kinesthetics need to feel good before they'll do something or before they'll purchase something. They actually need to feel good about it. And they're really interesting. When they learn something, they actually memorise by doing. So they'll do whatever it is that needs to be done so that they can remember how it's done. They're not too good at watching demonstrations. They need to move while they're doing it. Now, they tend to use words like feel, touch, I've got a grasp of it, it's concrete, yep, I've got a handle on that. Look, I think it boils down to hang in there, I've got good vibes about this, hold on, I'm going to throw that out, I'm sharp as a tack, here's a pain in the neck. And if you're having an argument with a kinesthetic or it's getting a little bit hectic, the word that you can use there is, yeah, I get what you're saying. And what that's saying to them is that you feel what's going on. And kinesthetically orientated communicators tend to go into jobs where touch is involved. We find a lot of athletes are kinesthetically orientated because they're very aware of their body and how they move in the world. But also massage therapists, chiropractors, physios, anywhere where there's that hands-on type of situation. Kinesthetic are very much about comfort as opposed to appearances. So where your visual is about appearances and you'll see them wearing high heels and maybe not very practical, a kinesthetic is much more about comfort. And they're often the people who say, how can you wear those? They must be really uncomfortable. So it's quite funny, actually. I'm going to make a joke up one day about a kinesthetic and a visual going shopping, because can you just imagine? You've got your visual walking through the shopping centre so fast because they can see everything and they can see all the shops and they know what they're looking for. They're great power shoppers, by the way. And the kinesthetic's trying to keep up because they move through the world a lot slower so that they can get a sense of what's happening in the shopping centre and whether they feel good about being there. So they come to a shop and a visual stands at the door and they look into the store and they actually look around and go, nope, there's nothing there for me. The poor kinesthetic's going, but I actually want to go in, and because a kinesthetic needs to touch things and actually needs to touch the clothes, and only then can they decide whether or not they want to leave the store. Now, it gets even worse. The visual sees something that they do want to try on. So what happens here is often with a visual, when they go shopping, they'll grab the item off the shelf and they'll actually be spot on with the size. Whereas what a kinesthetic will do is they'll probably grab two or three sizes because they want to make sure that it feels good for them. The visual goes into the change room, tries on the one outfit. They look fantastic in it. Guess what? They're buying it. They're out the door. Meanwhile, the kinesthetic's in there trying on clothes. And they're feeling okay, but they say to themselves, I just need to try on the next size because that might actually feel nicer and better. Meanwhile, the visual's banging on the door, telling them to get going because they need to hurry up because there's five more shops to go to. So one of the lessons that we learn is kinesthetic and visuals not too good at shopping together. Auditory-orientated communicators have a fairly even tempo and they're quite balanced with how they talk. Their vocal tone's quite modulated and it has a very clear, resonant quality to it. They're very much about experiencing the world by what they hear and they're very much into movement and music. I notice with a lot of auditory-orientated communicators that they tend to make noise. So there'll be people who whistle, sing songs to themselves, or just generally make noise. And often when I ask an audience why they do that, the answer is, yeah, they're making noise so that they can hear something. I've also noticed that they need quiet times as well, that sometimes, particularly as children, they come home from hearing noise all day. They'll want to go into their own room and have that quiet time in that space. A classic gesture or body movement of an auditory communicator is that they'll fold their arms and they'll often have their head tilted slightly so that they're turning their ear towards you so they can hear what you're saying. Now, they're very easily distracted by noise, so if you've got a message to get across to an auditory, you need to make sure that there's nothing distracting them. And it's very, very important to them that they're heard. And often this is a complaint that I hear from auditories. I'll say, aren't you listening to me, or you're not hearing me? Now, they are very, very, very aware of your tone of voice. And in fact, this causes a lot of problems for an auditory communicator. As children, they tend to take things to heart. And as a team member, they'll often be known as someone who's a little bit sensitive. And it's because what they do is they hear the tone of voice over anything the person's saying. And if you have someone in your life who's auditory, particularly a child, please teach them about this and teach them how to get beyond the tone of voice. Because think about this. If a visual's in a hurry and they're rushing around, will they be aware of how their tone of voice sounds? And the answer's no. So the best thing that you can do is teach your children in particular how to get over that. Interesting story about how tone of voice can impact on the learning ability of an auditory person. My son's quite auditory, and it was quite interesting where one year his marks started going down, and he kept coming home and saying that he didn't like the sound of his teacher's voice. And what it used to do is he used to allow it to get to him and grate on him, and he actually found the tone quite condescending. Now, it wasn't that way at all. I have met that teacher, and it's just his interpretation on it. And so what happened is that his marks started to go down that year. Now, the next year, he got a new teacher, and this teacher happened to be a young male from Scotland. And Bo's marks went through the roof. Why? Because he was so interested in the sound of this man's voice and the tone that he remembered everything, and his scores just went right up. I remember one night he came home and recited a 45-minute Scottish legend, word for word. And 45 minutes, didn't miss a beat because he was so interested in how this person sounded. Now, what I've had to teach him from now on is that, because I can't always get him a Scottish teacher, is that he's got to get beyond the tone of voice and listen to what the words that are actually being used. And it's quite profound. I also notice with him that, being a visual myself, I will often, when I'm in a hurry, yell out to him to hurry up. And it's the tone that I use with him as to whether I get a response or not. So when I yell out, hurry up, he tends to go slow. I don't think he means to do it. And when I can actually stop myself and be aware of my voice and say, okay, hurry up, please, he will tend to respond in a much more positive way. Auditory communicators have fantastic memories. And in fact, you'll notice that they don't take notes, or they didn't need to take notes when they were at school or when they had to study. And it's quite funny when you get an auditory with a visual, because, see, visuals tend to embellish stories to make them look better. And often auditories will say, yeah, but hang on, 3 weeks ago you said this. And so the visuals get really angry at the auditories and they think the auditories are being smart, but the auditories are actually just telling the truth because they remember what they said the last time. They tend to go into jobs where they're musicians, DJs, anything to do with sound. Auditory communicators tend to use words like hear, can you hear this? Are you listening to me? That sounds great. Yep, that's resonating with me. I'm all ears. That rings a bell. Are you listening to me? I've remembered that word for word. She's a blabbermouth. It's unheard of. I'm hearing you loud and clear. If you're in a situation where it's heading into conflict and they're mainly auditory, you just reflect back to them, I hear what you're saying. And that lets them know that you're getting the message. Audio-digital orientated communicators don't rely on their senses like the others to make decisions or to experience the world. So where we have visuals who experience the world through seeing, we have our auditories who mainly interpret their world by what they hear, and the kinesthetics who mainly experience their world by what they feel about things, audio-digital communicators are much more about facts and figures, so they're more about the thinking. Now because of that, their speech is very considered, and their vocal tone is very monotone because there's no need to put any type of emotion in the way that they speak. Their gestures and body movement are minimal. Once again, because there is no emotion in there, there's no need to embellish it with movement. These people mainly experience the world in facts and figures, and they're very precise and detailed. So you may remember before I said with visuals they're very much about big picture. They don't like going into details. These people are the ones who do like going into details. And sometimes they will clash. Because what happens is an audio-digital orientated communicator will give people facts and figures and data, not realising that there are a lot of people out there who don't need those. It just needs to look good to get them enrolled. Now, when they were at school, these people used to ask lots of questions and probably got told off for it because for them, things need to make sense. And so sometimes they ask questions and people think they're asking for the wrong reasons, but for these people, it's very, very important that things do make sense for them. They tend to go into jobs that involve safety. I was thinking about the other day, I was sitting on a plane looking out at someone with a checklist and I thought, I really hope that person's audio-digital orientated. Because, see, think about it. What would a visual do? Well, a visual would be there with their checklist, standing under the plane going, yep, that looks good, and just quickly ticking off all the boxes. It's an audio-digital who will actually stand there and tick every single box, even though they know that it's probably already done. So they're very systematic and they do follow through on that detail. They also tend to go into work with facts and figures, and they also tend to work with technical and IT type of jobs. Audio digitals tend to use words like abstract, idea, I understand that, I'm processing it, do you think that you know what you're saying, I'm perceiving that, I know, conceive, data, facts, figures. When you're talking with an audio digital and they're trying to get a message across and you need to acknowledge that, just say to them, yeah, I know. And then that way you're telling them that you're understanding what they're talking about. So I just want to have a talk about how you can apply all of this information in sales. And I want to use the example of selling a car. So if I'm selling a car to someone who is visually predominant, and I'll be able to tell that by the type of language that they use and how they present themselves, then I'm not going to tell them about the details of the car. Remember, we're talking big picture with these people. They're concerned in how it's going to look. So I'll point out things like the colour of the car, what the interior looks like, show them the dashboard, take them for a test drive, and I'll probably do that past shop windows so they can actually look and see how good that they look in the car. I'll tell them how nice they look in the car if that's how they look. And what we're doing here is just giving them the big picture of the car. If they're kinesthetically orientated, what we're talking about here, these people will be interested in the feel of the car. So when they go for a test drive, they'll be noticing how the car feels on the road. They'll notice it around corners. They're also going to be sitting on the seats and really getting comfortable in them. They'll be the ones who'll like the leather seating. So the kinesthetics, they will buy a car that feels really good, whereas your visuals are buying a car that looks good and they look good in it. For these people, it's much more about how they feel when they sit in the car. They'll check the leg length, they'll check how comfortable the seating is, and that's what they're aware of, and also how it handles on the road. The auditories. Well, what they do when they come into your car yard is they actually hop in the car and the first thing they do is turn the engine on. How come? Because they want to hear what the engine sounds like, or maybe how quiet it is. And as you take them for a test drive, they'll notice how quiet the car is, but then they'll reach for the sound system. How come? Because these are the people who love to have the top quality stereo in their car, because music and sound is so important to them. So what you're going to be pointing out here to these people is how good it sounds, the music system, how quiet the car is or how noisy the engine is, depending on what they're looking at, and then give them the details that just sound really good about the car. Now, the audio digitals, well, when they come along, the first thing they're going to do is actually open the bonnet and look underneath there. How come? Well, what they're looking for is the engine size. They're looking for the VIN number, the rego number. They're looking at how far it can go on petrol. Most importantly, these people are very aware of what price they can get it for. And so they don't really need to know how good they look in it, how well it feels, and what the radio sounds like. They're much more interested in the details. And I had an experience recently where myself, who's visual, my son, who's auditory, and a friend of ours, who's kinesthetic, all went to buy a car. And, well, we actually went to help my husband buy a car. I don't know if we were much help. You can just imagine this. So I've gone in, and the first thing I've done is seen a bright red car, and I've run over to it and just said, this is it. This is the car. My son's come over, and the first thing he's done is hopped in the car and turned on the stereo to see what it sounds like. My kinesthetic friend John, he's hopped in the front seat to see how it feels, and he's sort of rubbing himself up against the seat. Wasn't a good look. My husband, he's under the bonnet. And it was then that I realised, and I called out to him and said, what on earth are you doing looking under there? And he's looked across from the bonnet very guiltily, because I actually know that he knows nothing about engines. But it was the first place he went to. Why? Because he had to sort of know what the engine size is, even though he doesn't really know what that means. The poor salesperson didn't know where to start. So what I said to the salesperson is, he's the one who's buying the car. He's the one who you've got to make happy, and he wants the facts and figures and a good price. The salesperson actually walked over to my husband and started telling him how good the car looked. My husband looked at him as if he just didn't understand what he was talking about. And so this is what's so important in sales. You don't give people information that they don't need. Because once you start giving them information that they don't need, they don't even listen to you and they switch off. So for you as a salesperson to get rapport with someone, it's about speaking their language. It's about understanding where they're coming from and giving them what they need to be able to make a decision about your product. And even though you think that they might need the information, let them ask for it. They'll ask if they need it. What often happens is the audio digitals will take away all of the information. They will ask the questions and they will need it. A visual will take it away with them and might read it in a couple of years' time if it's important, but often they don't even go there. So how can teachers and coaches use this information? Well, with teaching, just imagine this. You've got a classroom of visuals, kinesthetics, auditory, and audio digitals. So when teaching in a classroom, it's really important that there's lots of demonstrations and that there are a lot of really great things for them to look at. You see, when something looks good, then you'll get the student enrolled in learning. The kinesthetics, well, they need to feel good in the classroom. So it's about creating a really good vibe in the classroom. And I know that when I'm setting up classrooms, when I'm talking to students, that I often have a candle burning, particularly with any sort of aromatherapy, and I hide it. People don't even know it's there. And really create a great vibe. with the auditories, you can create a really good atmosphere for them by having music playing as they come into the classroom so that you're setting up the atmosphere for the auditory. If we've got a really big session coming up and I want them to be really awake, then I'll have really boppy music. It's quite funny because the auditories and the kinesthetics dance as they're coming into the room. If it's going to be a session where I need them to do a lot of reflective thinking, then when they walk in, what they'll have is the type of music that's very soft and gentle. Now, knowing that I've got audio-digital learners in my classroom means that I'll use lots of facts and figures. These are the people who need the statistics. They need to know where the research has come from and who developed it. And the other thing I've noticed since I've learnt this is that when they ask questions, I don't get offended. I actually know that they're asking because they need the answers, because it has to make sense before they'll really get enrolled. Now, sometimes they ask questions that require a really detailed answer. What I do with that situation is I actually let them know that I'll see them in the break and fill them in with the details. Because if I answer those details, what happens is the visuals in particular in the classroom will shut down. Okay, quickly, using it with coaching. So we teach this to a lot of coaches. If I've got a skill that I need to teach my swimmers, for example, if I've got a visual swimmer, they need to see the skill done properly. If I can't demonstrate that, then that's where I'll bring a video in so that I can show them the video of what it is that I want them to do. It's also important that I videotape their swimming and show them their performance. It gives them the direct feedback. If I've got a kinesthetic learner who's a swimmer, the quickest way for me to teach them how to do it differently is to actually move their limbs for them, and with that they'll actually get an understanding of what it is they need to do. For the auditory learner in the swimming pool, it's just got to sound good what the new skill is. So it's very important that I articulate what it is that I need them to do. The audio digitals, well, they'll try the new skill so long as it makes sense, so long as you explain why it is that you're teaching them the new skill. And I'll ask you a few questions and just make sure that you answer them. So once you know these little hints, it just makes teaching and coaching so much more effective and a lot easier, and everyone's a lot happier at the end of the day. Now, I need to say up front that we're a mixture of all of these communication preferences. And here's a really fast way for you to work out which one you might have a preference towards if you haven't already worked it out. And if you had to make a really, really important decision in your life and you're only allowed to choose one way of making that decision, would it have to look good, sound good, feel right, or would the facts and figures have to add up? And what's your answer? For some of you, it has to look good. And there'll be some of you that it's got to sound right. Some of you, you'd have to feel really good about it. And for some people, the facts and figures would have to add up. And what you'll notice is that you've probably got a preference. And some of you, I know a lot of people will say, Carol, it has to look good and feel good. And they just couldn't choose between the two. Now, there's a lot of questionnaires that you can do, and they're only about 10 questions long. And it can start to give you an idea of your communication preference. And those are available on our website if you want to go to the downloads page, just out of interest, and work out what your preferences are.